Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back. It is the second hour of the show, and we have coming up Jill Schlesinger in the next segment to talk about those jobs figures. Ian Scheer from CNET with some interesting tech news this afternoon, 3:30. We have an audio cut of the day. Jane usually with me in the 3 o'clock hour. She's off this afternoon. I wanted to get to a couple of things, and one of them is, you know, baseball related. Let me see if I can get to both. But I had a chance, and I just finished it up this morning, the ESPN 30 for 30 on Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. I like to say Sammy Susser, as Ted Kennedy once called him, Matt McGwire and Sammy Susser. But A.J. Schnack did this documentary. It's called The Long Gone Summer. Camo X is featured prominently in the documentary. I saw Tom Ackerman's head because they shot some in the studio and in the sports office. You're going to see a lot from Mike Bush. Monica Adams is in the doc, Bob Costas, Mike Shannon, Jeff Tweedy did the score, Chip Carey, my old classmate from Parkway West here in Baldwin, and Mike Claiborne. Mike Claiborne might be the star of this. Dave Klein, I was texting him earlier. Claiborne might get like a best supporting. Do they do like best supporting actor nominations for documentaries? Do you know?
Oh, you'd hope so. I mean, so you think Claiborne is worthy of it?
I do. You know, it's funny, though. He is featured. He told me about this months ago. He said that he was interviewed. But, you know, nobody really knows until you see the finished product how much you're going to be featured. And he's featured quite a bit. And he, I don't want to spoil it, but there's a, I won't say, but Mike provides something at the end of the doc that's, I think, very, very cool. So anyway, that was fun. And I think people are going to like it. And you know what, Dave? I was not here in 98. I was in Milwaukee. And I think I told you that. And this was the one that A.J. Schnack left off. They didn't show like 63, 64, 65. They showed 62, and then they sort of skipped over a couple, and then they went to the, you know, 68, 69, 70. I was in the bathroom at Milwaukee County Stadium for either 64 or 65. I can't remember which one it was. I felt so stupid because that was the only reason to be at that game. It was an interleague game, if I remember correctly, because I don't think the Brewers would have been in the National League at that point. That was my first summer, second summer in Milwaukee. But what an amazing period. You were pretty young, though. You remember that?
Oh, I was at the game where he hit his 62nd home run. Yeah, I was there.
You really were?
Oh, yeah, yeah. My older brother, his friends had an extra ticket. So, of course, me being the big baseball fan that I am, I said, well, yeah, of course I'll go. And I remember it was just so packed, you know, more normal than you'd see it at a regular game. And what's weird is I'll never forget this. We were sitting high up, but it was almost like it was just so anticlimactic with how he hit that home run. It was just like a line drive over the wall, and people just got used to these bombs all year that he hits that, and you go, well, really, that's it?
Well, he makes mention of that, and I got to tell you something. Maybe it's because I think I would have felt this way anyway just because I'm such a big baseball fan, and some of the same emotions just as a sports fan we felt if you watched the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance. Man, I'll tell you what, there's so many emotions here from not only that year but just Busch Stadium, the old Busch Stadium. There's a scene in here, and I think people probably remember this, but man, Jack got real emotional after that, after 62. And the video of Jack in this, and obviously he's not around to comment on this, and you have Mike and Mike Claiborne and others that talk about Jack, but man, that's just cool to see that. So I think that Cardinals fans in particular are really, really going to enjoy this because they split their time between Sammy Sosa and Wrigley Field and the Cubs narrative and the Cardinals. I don't know if I could say the Cardinals get a little bit more love here, but I think they do just because, you know, Mark McGwire was top command, and Sammy Sosa makes it clear that he was still number two. So I think people are going to like that. By the way, Dave, I'll ask you that question that I asked the roundtable panel. Jeff Passan has a piece today saying there are simple solutions for baseball's return. They're right there waiting for owners and players to embrace, but they're just going back and forth on this money right now. And the answer, he says in his column, is really a fight over a few hundred million dollars. Now, that may sound like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, but Major League Baseball generates $10 billion in revenue. So hundreds of millions isn't exactly a rounding error. It's also not the sort of money, though, worth piloting an industry into a full-on labor war. And you know what that documentary, the 30 for 30 on McGuire and Sosa reminds us of, is how devastated baseball was in the aftermath of the strike and how that year brought fans back.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
So the question, I guess, is my question, because I kind of danced around it, is the panel I asked, what are your hopes at this point for a baseball season? Because I think they went way down today.
I'm cautiously optimistic. And I only say that just because I go back to what Chris Raby said with you either yesterday or the day before, where at the beginning of this, you saw all these negotiations that were going through the press. And now it's been kind of less and less. So hopefully that's a good sign and that you're going to see something here maybe soon. Who knows? Who knows? Cautiously optimistic is what I'm going with.
I'm going to say, because what people like Mr. Claiborne and others tell me, and I've talked to John Rooney about this too, is there's just too much money on the line. And I think that people feel that way. But man, you would hope that there would be a little bit more positive news. But Chris even said yesterday, look, some of this stuff might be happening behind the scenes and maybe we don't know about it. So we could get some good news here in the next few days. We've got to take a break. We're coming back with more CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger coming up next. Ian Scheer, the senior editor with CNET. We hopefully will squeeze in number one songs this day in history and an audio cut of the day right up into Total Information PM at 4 o'clock this afternoon on KMOX.
Miss any part of the Mark Reardon Show? Download the podcast anytime.
Initiating download. Stand by.
At KMOX.com/Reardon.
By the way, during the break, just got confirmation that A.J. Schnack, the director of the 30 for 30 on the Big Mac and Sammy Sosa home run chase will join me next week, I think next Friday, so a week from today, previewing that documentary, which will air next Sunday. We're joined this afternoon. We got these jobs numbers today that were surprisingly good. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger, who is my my second favorite, as I do like Steve Futterman a lot. Jill, how are you?
I will not be outdone by Futterman, and now you've laid down the gauntlet.
I like Steve a lot. He is one of my favorites, but I haven't talked to you in a while. Before we get to the economy, which is good news, let me just ask you, you don't live in Manhattan, but obviously I forget what borough. What's it like there right now?
I do live in Manhattan, although I have not been back to Manhattan in now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Almost 3 months, which is crazy. I am out on Long Island, which is where I've been hiding and socially distancing and keeping my hands clean and wearing my beautiful mask. So happily, I might
I'm
add.
Sorry. I thought you did not live in Manhattan. So you're staying away. I mean, how does Manhattan recover, Jill?
No, there's a very resilient city. I mean, it's going to always come back. It's going to come back in different forms. This is exactly what it was like after 9/11, where people were saying, no, the city's never going to be the same again. It isn't. It's going to be different, and it doesn't have to be better, worse, anything. It's just going to be different. I think that obviously there's a lot of changes economically. What I'm very interested in trying to understand is how businesses try to come back from this and change the way they are conducting themselves. You know, it may be, for example, a place like CBS where I work, where we say, hey, not everybody's in that building at the same time. And there are a lot of skyscrapers in Manhattan, up and down the island. There are a lot of places where there's density, and there may be different ways of working. And I'm intrigued to see how that plays out over the next few years.
So, out of curiosity, did you have to rent a place just to get out of Manhattan, or do you have family or something along those lines?
No, I have a second home, luckily for me, and so I decamped very quickly. It was actually fascinating because early on, you know this, I don't know if your listeners know this, but the CBS Broadcast Center closed before New York actually closed because we had an outbreak of a bunch of cases in our building. And so what happened was that day I was in my apartment and kind of said, well, let's pack up and we'll go out to Long Island, so, which is what we did. But then I actually went back into the city a few times that first week. I went back and forth a few times to do some pieces for Sunday morning, to do some things for evening news. And then I actually remember the last time I took the subway, which I think was Friday, March 15th, because I was running to make an evening news segment hit that we were doing down on Wall Street. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get down fast enough because I was going to miss my time. And I jumped on the subway and the subway car was empty. And it was, I remember feeling like, this is so weird. This is so surreal. Now it's, you know, everything is surreal. And I've been back to the city a bunch of times, but I haven't been working from there. And friends of mine and family that are there, you know, they do say it's just kind of spooky and people are looking forward to a time where, you know, our routines come back online.
Yeah, you know, I took my son 2 years ago, two summers ago, right before he started at Mizzou to go see a couple of Broadway shows and visit Manhattan. And I had been there a couple of times in the past 5 years and really wanted to get back. So I hope that next summer can make a return trip and see some of the sights and see some shows and things along those lines. In the meantime, we have this economic report. Mm. And, you know, when the weather guys get things wrong, we tend to give them trouble and make fun of them because maybe it's not a good result. But in this case, some folks got it wrong, but it's a good result because we had more jobs come back than we expected. So what can we say about this? You know, I'm looking at this New York Times graph, Jill, that shows what happened when everybody lost their jobs, just skyrocketed up to 14%. So now we drop a little bit. Are these the people who were furloughed who are able to sign back on with their employers?
We have no idea. And I would like to say, in defense of the economists and the weather people out there and meteorologists, I know they do their best based on the information at hand, but this was a huge miss. When I looked at all the economists' reports that came in over the past week or so, it was interesting. It was quite wide in terms of like the number of people actually losing jobs. So I saw anywhere from a low, like 3 million jobs lost, up to like 10.5 million jobs lost. So, you know, that's a big, wide range. But to come in and say there's 2.5 million jobs added, that's massive. That's a big change. Okay, so what's happening? There's some theories. We don't know yet. Clearly, a bunch of restaurant and bars rehired folks. So there may be some of this is some of the PPP money coming in, right? And so people got the payroll protection, brought people back on their payrolls, and those folks left the unemployment realm. It could also be that there are parts of the country opening up and bringing other aspects, other parts of the sectors of the economy coming back. And you know, the last piece of this that I think is interesting is the actual unemployment rate is a little strange the way it's calculated. We've talked about this because remember in the Great Recession, I would say like, yeah, you know, like the broader unemployment rate sometimes doesn't, you know, is scarier than the headline rate. And right, what that right. means, it's just a weird way that they calculate it. They basically say, hey, are you unemployed or are you working? And if you're unemployed, why are you unemployed? And are you actively seeking a job? So that's a lot of different categories you could fall in. So in this one, it's clear that if people don't know whether they're unemployed or not. They don't know if furlough counts as unemployed. They're saying, are you unemployed for another reason? And the Labor Department puts a note in this actual report and it says that if some of these people who say I'm absent from work and they weren't counted as unemployed, but if they had been classified as temporarily laid off, the unemployment rate would have been 3 percentage points higher than reported. So instead of 13.3, it would have been 16.3. Now, that's obviously a pretty big difference because if we had gone from 14.7 to over 16, we would have been like, oh my God, this is horrible. But it just shows you there's a lot of fudge factor in this.
Yeah, so where does this take us? I mean, you would have to think that the jobs are going to keep coming back. They're not going to maybe come back as quickly as they did in May. One of the concerns that I have, like I can speak to my part of the country here in St. Louis, we have a big healthcare industry. There have been a lot of healthcare layoffs. So you have restaurant workers, you have the gig economy, but then you have some people in, you know, whether it's in hospitals or even related to Washington University and St. Louis University here that have lost their jobs or been furloughed. Now, we're getting more of these procedures back, but there's there's not going to be a quick snapback, I don't think, in that industry immediately, is there?
Yes, you're absolutely right. So I agree. I think that what we're probably, like, what we're going to look back and say is probably April was the worst month. You know, it will be the, you know, the Ides of April, basically.
Ever.
We're going to say, like, horrible, horrible month. Let's wipe that away. And we're going to find, I think, you're right, that there's a lot of people who are going to come off the unemployment rolls. But then there's going to be a lot of businesses that say, maybe we don't need all of these people. Like, gosh, isn't it interesting how we were able to actually conduct our business remotely? What does that mean for our business? And I'll give you a great example of this. I was talking to a partner at a law firm, and this guy said to me, you know, don't say my name. Don't say the name of the firm. We are actively considering laying off 80% of our support staff. And I said, what do you mean?
Holy cow.
He said, because we don't need them. We just figured out the electronic way around this. And so I think that they're going to be, let's say that there's about 20 million Americans that are unemployed. The question is, are some of those jobs gone forever? That's the real question.
Yeah.
And we don't know yet. And I know that all of us, we've figured out different ways. You know, if you're lucky enough to work from home, you have figured out a lot of workarounds, right? And it does mean that our bosses are going to say, hey, Schlesinger, she can do remote. She can do, she can have, we have this little program. Instead of sending a crew out, we can actually have her take a camera person with her, and that's it, and one producer. And you know what I mean? So you can have, you could
see. Oh, yeah, right.
How the big companies especially could say, eh, we don't need as many people.
Yeah, because your anecdote is going to repeat itself God knows how many times over the course of the next few months with businesses. And then, you know, I think maybe you and I talked about this at the beginning of this crisis. Maybe not. I think I talked to some other economists. You just look at New York is going to be a prime example, but even St. Louis, which is not a thriving downtown, look at commercial real estate and how many of those offices will be needed.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be fascinating. And now, it doesn't mean that real estate is going away as an investment. I interviewed a guy who's really smart about, just in general, about retail and malls. And one of the things he said is that, you know, real estate is location, location, location. And so what we're going to find out is, what are the uses of the real estate? And I think about yourself and think about your daily routine. And I have plenty of friends who are like, oh, I miss going to the gym. I love the gym. And then you're like, but you know what? I could figure out how to do this. And maybe I'll save myself $100 a month by not joining the gym. And so there, you could see that every one of us, because this has been a long enough period to really think about it, you know, 90 days, a long time to really change some of your habits, you decide which ones are going to stick and which ones are not. You know, I moved my podcast to daily because I got so many financial questions, and I'm fascinated. But, you know, I got so many people who are just freaking out in March, and some of them writing back and saying, you know, you were right. I shouldn't have sold anything, this, that, and the other thing. But what I have figured out in the last couple of months is I don't need to spend as much money as I used to spend. Like, I just don't need that.
You know, and I'm fine. Look, Jill, I am the spender in my household, and you can't have two. You know, my wife is very responsible, but I like to buy clothes. And I'll tell you what, I'm just going to be honest with you here. I've worn the same clothes for pretty much two outfits back and forth, depending on how warm it is. I wear shorts, wearing shorts today for the last 3 months. Now, that's a slight exaggeration, but I certainly don't have to expand the wardrobe very much. And there are some things, you know, just personally, you think, you know, maybe it's not a bad thing to cut back. But then that has that overall effect on the economy.
I know. It's so, I always feel really guilty about this because on one hand, you know, as a financial planner, you know, I'm still a CFP, not that I have clients anymore, but you're all listening. You're my clients. You know, as a CFP, I want you to be really smart about how you spend money. You know, but for someone who's kind of a cheerleader for the economy getting better, it's not good for the economy if everyone's watching
That's
how
right.
they're spending, right?
Right?
And one other area that I would just point out, because you mentioned WashU, I know you've got, you know, you're a big university town. I am also very interested to see how families are going to be approaching academics.
Education,
and,
higher
and
education. Absolutely.
Right? And say, like, are people really psyched about writing those fat checks after they really see what these kids are doing? You know, like online learning, like, oh, it's great.
No.
Like, that's great. If you're at WashU, amazing university, you're going to get a degree with an awesome credential. But if you go down the scale a little bit and you go to some of the mid-tier schools, especially the liberal arts schools where you're not going to get a job when you come out, gosh, I think that that's going to have a real important impact. And believe me, Not that I want business, the schools to go out of business, but I just don't want them to cost this much because families are going into hocks still to get these degrees.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And so many different transformations. And, you know, I always want to be a little sensitive here because we're talking about these things and there are people that are getting their jobs back, but there are a lot of people that aren't getting their jobs back right now. And the amazing amount of stress that that's going to put on families, you know, in my listening area and across the country, I can't even imagine. Jill, it's so great to hook up with you again. I'm glad you're doing well. Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst. She's all over the place. I've seen you on that Sunday morning show a lot, so you're doing a great job, and I appreciate you coming back here this afternoon.
Well, it's great to be with you, and you be safe. And if anyone has a financial question, they can send it to me. Ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
There you go. Jill Schlesinger with us this afternoon, 3:30 on The Voice of St. Louis. And Carol has all the top news stories. We're going to go to the tech world and Ian Scheer from CNET coming up.
News Radio 1120 KMOX, The Voice of the Cardinals.
Just saw somebody tweet concerning NYC hospital admissions nearly doubled overnight. 48 yesterday, 84 today. I mean, in my mind, that's got to be the pool party at the Lake of the Ozarks. I don't think there's any other explanation if you really think about it. We are joined this afternoon. I hope I just put that on Twitter too, Ian, and I'm guessing you detected the sarcasm in my voice, but every once in a while, people think I'm serious. How are you, Ian Scheer from CNET? Great to have you on.
Good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm good. We've been talking about protests across the country because of George Floyd, but you've brought my attention to something related to 5G technology that I wasn't even aware of, that there's a protest involving 5G towers that's planned this weekend?
Yeah, it's a little odd. What's going on is that there is a lot of pressure being pushed back against 5G, entirely, because of conspiracy theories that have been spreading on the internet. So there's a lot of people who unfortunately believe that 5G technology is dangerous for them. There's even a subset of people who don't understand biology and believe that 5G is somehow affecting and causing the coronavirus. We have a good story on CNET explaining how that's not possible. But it's caused a lot of trouble. There are nearly 80 cell towers that have been vandalized and burned in the UK. And now there's a protest planned this weekend where there's concern that the towers in the U.S. may also start seeing them being burned as well.
Just when we need that. Now, I'm hoping that doesn't happen. But if it does happen, in my understanding, so I have the newest, you know, iPhone, right? But that iPhone can't even get 5G, is my understanding.
Yeah, in fact, most phones out there don't have 5G, and also there isn't a ton of 5G out there. So what's happened is that there's a lot of confusion. We've written on CNET that there's actually surveys that have been done that find that a lot of people believe they have 5G, even they don't. And part of that is because most of your iPhones, if you look on them, it says that it has 5GE if you're an AT&T subscriber. A lot of other phones that are on AT&T do this as well. This is actually a marketing ploy by AT&T. It's not 5G. So it's a lot of that stuff has caused a lot of confusion. There's also kind of concern about next-generation technology and what it means. The way 5G works requires a lot more cell towers to be put up, so that's concerned some people. And it's just it's caused this whole mess in an environment where conspiracy theories run rampant.
First of all, you're telling me that you cannot get the coronavirus from radio waves? Just to make sure.
That's
shocking. That is shocking to me. Good to hear that. But on the conspiracy front, you know, and I went off on a tangent about this a few weeks ago. The whole Bill Gates COVID-19 microchip one is that continues to spread out there.
It does. And in fact, I have to give Bill Gates credit. He's actually spoken out on this. He rightfully put it in its place, calling the conspiracy theory stupid, which I think is the kindest word you could use. And part of the problem, he said, is that there's so many conspiracy theories about him that it's almost becoming impossible to track them. So we have a great story on CNET that talks about some survey data that I was able to find that found that a shocking number of people, we're talking about, for example, 44% of Republicans, 19% of Democrats believe that somehow Bill Gates is going to use the coronavirus vaccine when it comes out to track us all and insert microchips. And it's really odd to see this. There's also another survey out there that was done by the New York Times and a media watcher called Signal, where they found that in April, misinformation about Bill Gates was the most widely spread of all coronavirus falsehoods. It's rather shocking.
Yeah, you got to remember, though, that Fauci's involved in this, and they're both doing this to, you know, to basically make money, because Bill Gates is hurting. I mean, this has put the hurt on him, the coronavirus. So I wouldn't discount these as quickly as you have, Ian. Come on,
man. Yeah, he's only the third richest man in the world. You've got a good point.
It's amazing to me how people, and I've gone off on this before, but, you know, people post these things on Twitter and Facebook with no evidence that they're true whatsoever. And I've pushed back on these things before, and I certainly did a few weeks ago. And people complain because I don't agree with it. It's not that. It's that there's no proof that it's true. I mean, you have to at least find a little bit of proof. Yeah, maybe just a nugget for someone that has credibility. But in many of these situations, you just won't have that. And people, you know, we're in a situation right now, and I think this is only going to get worse, where people are going to believe what they want to believe. And unfortunately, I think you would agree that social media, as much as we do like aspects of it, makes these things worse.
Yeah, it reinforces a lot of the stuff. There's been a lot of research done about this where when you start going down a rabbit hole, the way that the computer programs are written, they want you to keep going on the site, right? They want you to find the stuff you're interested in and keep watching it on YouTube, keep reading it on Facebook. And as a result, we go down these rabbit holes, if we're not careful, where suddenly we're in the Flat Earth Society and we're being told that Bill Gates is somehow trying to track us all and all this other stuff. And it's really concerning. You know, I found a story that where I was looking at how YouTube and the video game industry encourages a lot of harassing behavior. And what I found was that the minute that I started looking at these videos, YouTube just kept recommending more and more extremist videos to me. And it's really concerning. It's something that the companies kind of acknowledge and they've tried to make better. But it is far from perfect, and it's causing a lot of troubles in our society.
So I only have a couple more minutes, but I think this is interesting. I actually tweeted something out earlier today, and I had a spelling error, and I left it up there because I didn't want to take the tweet down. It got a lot of attention, but it was frustrating.
Spelling error means you're part of the conspiracy.
Well, that might be, but I couldn't edit Twitter. That frustrates me. But there's a feature on Facebook that you guys have written about, which is called Manage Activity. So what is that about?
Yeah. So this is something where Facebook, this is the whole other end of the pie, is that Facebook always wants us to use this stuff. So one of the things that researchers have been finding is that anecdotal evidence suggests that people are actually posting on Facebook less, even though they might be using it more, which is Facebook's own data. They're actually not posting as much, and particularly personal stuff, which is what Facebook was used for a long, long time. And one of the things that Facebook thinks is causing this is that we're all worried about how the internet is forever, and when we post something crazy, it's going to come back and bite us in the future, and which is not wrong. So what they've done is that they've created this feature where you can go through and you can actually select which posts you want to archive, which means only you can view them. You can trash them, which means they're deleted, although I will warn everyone listening that nothing is really ever deleted off the internet. So don't trust that.
Right, right.
But also, you know, it's something that's a little more granular than what Facebook used to offer, which was just a one button and you kind of private everything on your Facebook made the day and before. And now they're trying to say, okay, let's give you a little bit of control. I don't know how much of an impact it's going to have, and I'm really curious to see in the next couple of years whether we still hear stories about college students who get their invitations revoked because the admissions officer found something terrible on Facebook, or people getting fired because of what's written on Facebook. And those are the things that Facebook, I think, is aware of and at least wants to give us a sense of control.
So where is that feature? Is it something that's available on Facebook, right? Like, I'm on my page right now, and I don't see anything that would allow me to do that.
Yeah. It's rolling out over the next couple of weeks. You know, part of the problem with a service that serves nearly 3 billion people is that It takes a while for all the computers to kind of get up to the latest date software. So you will get it eventually. It's going to be in your mobile phone first. So if you have the phone app, it'll have an update eventually, and then you can do it. And we have instructions on CNET that walk you through how it'll work. But it's probably going to be a few days or even weeks before everyone gets it.
Yeah, and that's typically, you know, how it happens. But I just wanted to make sure. That's interesting, though. And then maybe they'll finally get to that edit button on Twitter. On the Facebook thing, you know, I like to go through my Facebook memories, and I did that today just to see, you know, what I was doing a few years ago. I like to look at the pictures of my daughter. But I will say, if you go back to the early days of Facebook, when a lot of us were tweeting, "Hey, I'm eating a cheese sandwich right now with mayonnaise," or something ridiculous like that, then I kind of get embarrassed by that. On this day, though, in 2011, you'll find
cheese
out.
Cheese and mayonnaise? Yeah. What's wrong with you?
Well, I mean, that was a good staple when I was a kid. You will be happy to know, though, that on this day, June 5th, 2011, I saved a turtle on a bike ride. That's what memories have told me. So there you go.
There you go.
Pretty special. Ian Scheer from CNET. Great to hook up. Have a great weekend.
Take care, man.
3:45 at the Voice of St. Louis. I still have number one songs to do this afternoon, this day in history. We roll those down on a Friday afternoon. And also an audio cut of the day coming up next.
Late last night I was thinking.
Hey, I got to throw in a big plug for the Mighty Pines. Great St. Louis band, Neil Sosik from the Mighty Pines, who is the vocalist here in this song, Late Last Night. The title track from their brand new record came out a week ago. They're doing a show at the Pageant tomorrow night. Unfortunately, you cannot go, but you can watch it. Go to thepageant.com and check it out, 9 o'clock. It's their record release party, and I'm bummed because these guys are outstanding. Outstanding live. I saw them a couple years ago at the Roots and Blues Music Festival. Anyway, tomorrow night, go to thepageant.com, check out the Mighty Pines. Got to do this.
Whiplash propelled us into a time warp, Captain. Backward.
This is a Flashback Friday. Flashback. Number one songs of the 70s to today.
They don't make music like that anymore.
With Mark Rudin on KMOX.
All right, we got some new ones in here. Let's go to 1970, 50 years ago. The Beatles were number one with this song.
The long and winding road.
Fast forward 10 years, and there was a little bit of a different sound from Lip Sync.
I want to take me to Funky Town. Want to take me to.
And the number one song from 1990, I'm going to have to confess, maybe just a slight guilty pleasure, although I think this song was mocked relentlessly by Wilson Phillips.
Someday somebody's going to make you want to turn around and say goodbye.
I remember seeing some videos of people making fun of that. That was number one in 1990. In 2000, this was number one. Aaliyah. Try Again. I have no recollection of this song whatsoever. I think it was Busy raising small children at the time. 2010, Usher was number one. And look who's back on top. 2020, Lady Gaga has a new song. It's already number one. There you go, number one song. Hey, Dave, you know what? I may call a bit of an audible. Do you have the Rat song that's there also that I had you pull?
I do.
If you do, play that. Play that for me here because I love this, too. This may cut into my audio cut of the day. But many of you have probably seen the commercial featuring the hair band Rat performing their hit Round and Round, the Geico commercial. Here's the song. So, after debuting nearly 2 months ago, that commercial, it's aired more than 10,000 times, and a lot of people have been interested in the song now. So it's now back on the Billboard charts for the first time in years. Rat, Round and Round, even in the top 20, which is kind of amazing. Audio cut of the daytime.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Charles Barkley on the Drew Brees situation.
Original statement I thought was insensitive. It was very insensitive, especially during this time. But I thought the negative reaction from every talking head on television and some of his teammates was overkill. I've never heard a bad word about Drew Brees in my life. He made a mistake. But we've gotten to the point in society where everybody on social media thinks they are God, judge, and jury. Drew Brees made a mistake.
That's Chuck, and I agree with him. Why can't more people think of these things along those lines? Total Information PM is coming up next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.